Welcome to Day 2 Cloud. Today's conversation is a sponsored conversation from VMware all about operationalizing your hybrid cloud. And for me, the central theme of this entire conversation was consistency. Consistency is key for your operations team, and it's key for your end users. That's what they want to see, low friction and high consistency. What stood out to you, Ethan?
Well, this is a VMware conversation, right, Ned? And so people that have heard VMware talk about cloud before go, oh, consistency, that means VMware cloud on AWS, blah, blah, I don't care because cloud native. Okay, we are going to take that on in this conversation. We do have the cloud native part of the conversation, which is, it is compelling, Ned, to me, because it actually reinforced the consistency theme. And I don't think I was quite expecting it the way they presented it. It was interesting to me.
Right. We didn't just stick completely inside the software-defined data center. We actually moved a little bit outside of that and getting into those additional services and how they can be integrated in a way that is, wait for it, consistent. So please enjoy the sponsored conversation. We've got Brandon Gordon. He's a staff technical marketing architect, and Matt Bradford, a senior technical marketing manager from VMware. So the core premise of today's episode is operationalizing your hybrid cloud, which is hard to say out loud. But one of the things that most people who are listening are going to have is some level of private data center and maybe even private cloud if they've gotten fancy. And they're going to have some level of public cloud. And Matt, I'm going to throw this to you. What's the deal with consistent operations? Because I think the premise here is that you need to have consistent operations, but do you really? And what's the benefit there?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely you need it. Because no matter whose roof your services and your applications are running under, right, your scope of your responsibilities may change, you know, if you're running inside your data center or if you're running inside of somebody else's, right? Your scope of responsibility is going to change a little bit there, but there's still going to be very consistent, very common challenges between your on-premises and running in public cloud, like, say, VMware Cloud on AWS, right? We still need to, we're basically given a platform, and we still need to manage the performance, manage the capacity, provide services to our end users in the same way that we do on premises. Now, we don't want to be leveraging many different sets of tools to be able to do that either, right? We want a common tool structure that understands both sides, right? What we're running on-prem, what we're running in the cloud. And so, you know, having a common set of tools like, you know, we do with the vRealize suite to be able to understand everything that's going on and to provide these services no matter where you're running them, I think that's very, very important.
Well, so consistent operations can mean doing the same thing in multiple places, but could also mean more specifically the same thing in the same way. Are you talking about the same thing in the same way?
Yeah, I mean, look at, self-service, for example, right? Your customers want to be able to provision, services, provision workloads, virtual machines, right? They don't necessarily need to care or know which data center those virtual machines are running inside, right? We want to be able to provide a very consistent catalog of services. You know, maybe they do care from a costing perspective, but maybe from a technology perspective, it doesn't necessarily matter. So, you know, do we really want to, kind of give them a different set of tools for one versus the other? No, I mean, it's just going to confuse the customers a little bit more, right?
Right. I'm sort of envisioning, I want a virtual machine and I want to provision this one on-prem and I want to do this one up in the cloud. I don't want to get into the minutiae of how I spin up an EC2 instance. Mm-hmm. Or versus a VMware virtual machine. I just want a VM. Can I just have that VM, please? Is that, that's kind of what you're getting at?
Yeah, exactly.
And you can even define policies to say that take away the choice from the user. They don't really need to know that it's on EC2 or know that it's on-prem. You can design like the inputs that the system automatically detects where it should be deployed based on what the user suggests or enters. So you can even do policies like that where, if I pick this particular application, it automatically goes to EC2. This other application, it automatically goes to the on-prem. You can define those policies as well. So, you don't have to give that choice to the user. You can keep that control as the administrator of the catalog.
In other words, I want to get the job done for whatever that the consumer of this product needs. They don't need to know about the back end, but that doesn't mean my back end is limited. I have choices. I'm dealing with an abstraction layer that I'm presenting something uniformly to the user, however it's really happening, however, whether it's EC2 or a VM or whatever it might be.
Exactly.
But at the same time, so that's the self-service feature that's customer-facing. You, as an administrator and an operator, also have things that you need to accomplish. And I think, Matt, going back to what you were talking about, you've got that sort of levels of responsibility and who's responsible for what. When you're using public cloud, that responsibility matrix is different than when you're running on private cloud. Where does those lines of delineation live?
I mean, really, the differences are, obviously, if you're running inside your own data center, right, you're managing that infrastructure, you're managing that SAN, that vSAN, those ESXi hosts, enclosures that they're running inside and everything, right? Those responsibilities, you know, you're not necessarily responsible for those if you're going into public cloud, right? You still are a little bit concerned about the performance of those, because while the service that you're purchasing for from public cloud providers, they're concerned with making sure that everything's up and running, but it's really up to you to make sure that things are up and running well and that your applications are performing well. Right. So, you know, the responsibilities are going to change a little bit, again, depending upon whose roof you're running under. Right. Your service provider is going to be responsible for all of that infrastructure, making sure that it is running for you and that it is available for you. But you're still responsible for the performance of those applications running on top of that infrastructure. Right. So you're still, again, going to be concerned with things like capacity. Am I running things a little too dense? Am I, you know, do I have workloads that are impacting other workloads? You know, what is the performance of that underlying hardware? Maybe I don't necessarily have to troubleshoot that hardware, but I want to make sure that I pick the right tier to match the performance that I'm expecting out of my applications.
Right, because ultimately you're responsible for those applications running properly and the business getting their work done and making money. And the cloud's not going to solve all of that stuff for you. So one of the concepts that we're talking about here is kind of like a hybrid cloud arrangement. And is hybrid cloud simply just I've got public and private, or is there something a little bit more to that term?
Yeah, there definitely is. I mean, look, you know, if you're, we certainly still see some industries and organizations that are, I'm going to be, you know, very private cloud. I want everything running inside my data center. I want, you know, everything within the walls of my organization. However, you know, what we're starting to see is obviously a lot of customers are already there. They're already adopting public cloud. But, you know, for some of the customers that are maybe still holding out, I got news for you. Like, public cloud is going to come, right? we're getting used to things like Office 365. We're, you know, even in our personal lives, we've got Google Photos and Gmail and everything like that, right? So public cloud is part of our lives, whether we want it to be or not. And the more that we use it, the more confidence we have in it. And, you know, we're starting to see a lot of that kind of drive adoption within, you know, various organizations. Now, once they're there, once public cloud is here, and even private cloud for that matter, we don't really consider it a cloud until you bring in that self-service piece, right? We've built out these software-defined data centers. Let's start leveraging that. Let's get out of the opening a ticket to request a virtual machine. Let's start doing self-service and providing self-service for our customers. And, you know, because otherwise they're going to start getting bored. And that's where we start to see things like shadow clouds spinning up, right? we've also going to be able to, you know, really kind of provide these services to all different walks of life too, right? We've got those customers that want to use the APIs, that want to spin up workloads with APIs. We've got the, you know, sysadmins that love their CLIs. We need to provide services to them. And then, you know, the more traditional type of teams that leverage like forms-based requisition too, right? So by using all these pieces, now we can start to leverage that software-defined data center, right? We can stand up the network stacks. We can stand up the storage for that. We can provide these services on demand, right? So that our customers don't get bored and try to find their own solutions that are much faster than what IT can provide.
Hmm. Right, right. It's all about reducing the friction that the consumers of your services feel. If they feel too much friction, they're out of there, man. They got a credit card. They can swipe that through whatever cloud they feel like.
I love the term shadow cloud. I mean, that sounds like an awesome game. I definitely want to play shadow
cloud. Or an excellent metal band.
Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, so this whole shadow thing has come up a bit. Reducing friction is key. But there's also some complexity that we're dealing with here. So the customers that are adopting hybrid clouds as we've defined them, that is self-service, there's some operational unity between what's going on in public and private cloud. We're trying to get to a point where it feels like one environment that our customers, the customers of our IT services, are consuming. It's got a similar look and feel. How are you actually launching that? Because going from traditional IT to a cloud model is complicated. Adding hybrid to that is even more complex. So who are the customers that are successfully adopting this? What do they look like?
Typically, customers start looking at it for several different reasons. They've come up to a hardware refresh. They could maybe have issues getting capital or OpEx expenses, and they want to look at other options. This is it can be like data center evacuations. Lease is coming due on a data center. They need to evacuate to another location. Or they're running out of space in their data center. They just don't have physically the room to deploy new servers. Things like that. Challenges that, that in their own physical data center is becoming problematic. And that's where using things like VMware Cloud on AWS, it's still another vSphere environment. It's just not something, you manage the hardware for, but it's the same thing you use on-prem. It's just now provided as a service.
But the scenario where adding more hardware to the mix is not an option because reasons, we gave several reasons why that might be. So, but they want the same experience. Great, I'm going to spin this up in the public cloud. You're saying, okay.
Exactly, yeah. And, because it's based on vSphere, it feels and acts very very familiar to what they already do today.
Yep.
And that's where the vRealize products, it basically treats it as another vCenter as well. So you monitor the vCenter and all the virtual machines just like you do in the on-prem environment. And even on the self-service catalog, again, the catalog is the same. That just makes it much easier to manage.
Okay, right. And we've talked about this on Day 2 Cloud some before, where VMC on AWS is, yes, you're in an Amazon data center, but no, you're not dealing with all of the Amazon constructs and so on exactly. It really feels like you're dealing with VMware.
Exactly, yeah. Yes.
Okay, so that's one approach, that brownfield approach. Is there we got another kind of customer that's doing this too?
Yeah, so then you also have the greenfield customers, customers that aren't looking at doing the data center migration or not doing an evacuation or stuff like that. This is just have a net new environment that they're wanting to deploy. They need to have infrastructure, and you can actually just go spin up and start deploying new stuff. You don't have to come in and bring your old baggage into this new data center. You can start fresh and start deploying like it's new.
Baggage. I mean, carefully considered and well developed processes over time, and you're calling it baggage. I don't know, man. I'm hurt. I'm hurting a lot.
I'm a former customer as well, so I can relate to a lot of those policies and procedures that may not make a lot of sense in modern days.
Okay, so greenfield is actually interesting because there's a couple ways you can think about this. If you've got real estate and you could stand up a data center, there's a case being where maybe you want to do that, but then a lot of shops are just the opposite. We're like, no more expensive data center, computer room, raised floor, air conditioning, blah blah space. We're over that, done. Public cloud. But it's still not cheap to go up to public cloud. Is there a cost benefit analysis you have to do to make the decision of your own physical, more of that versus going up to public cloud?
Yeah, so that's actually something we have in vRealize operations. So we actually have some tools in there that can do what if analysis. So you can, if you're a brownfield, you can do what does it look like if I take these virtual machines and move them to either VMware Cloud on AWS or native AWS or Azure or Google Cloud or whatever. We can look at doing those migrations. This is for the brownfield type stuff, and then we can also use these same scenarios for greenfield. It's like if I were to deploy 100 virtual machines with this size, how many hosts do I need to subscribe to? It tells you that as well. So these are all kinds of stuff you can do for planning about what you want to do in those environments. So that's kind of like the initial getting ready, getting started. And then we also have with our vRealize Network Insight, you can look at it from a network perspective. Like if again, like the migration scenario, you can look at, you know, finding all of your applications, discovering how, you know, who's talking to who, and make sure that you know exactly what you need to move. You're not going to leave this app server hanging behind when you migrate the rest of the application, or, you know, you want to make sure you find everything.
I mean, and then move latency's it all at one. Fun though.
You say fun.
Fun? Yeah, I don't know what to say, fun.
And I mean, then there's the other side of it too, right? Is you really want to make sure that you're running efficiently, because now you've got a monthly bill attached to, you know, what you're running. Whereas, okay, yeah, sure, we do costing and so forth, and we have a rough idea of, you know, how we're running. Well, if we're not sharing those numbers with the business, then that's kind of on us. But now that we're running, you know, public cloud, we're getting those monthly bills. It's a lot harder to hide those costs. So, you know, we want to make sure that we're not running, you know, virtual machines that, have four virtual CPUs and 16 gigs of RAM to run a batch script, right? We want to make sure that we've got our consolidation as tight as possible, too. And that's where...
It's a really, really big batch script, Matt. It's really big. but your point here is the desire of engineers to over-engineer things is just, that's who we are. You know, we want to build...
Yeah, more CPU.
Yeah. But of course, right. So if we're doing a greenfield deployment in the cloud, that is not how you do capacity management. You don't plan for peak load. You plan for as much as you typically need, and then the hope would be, and correct me if I'm wrong here, you've got an application architecture that can stretch a bit. That is, it's constructed such that you can go elastic, add some more capacity on the fly as you need it, and then scale that back down, or your costs really are going to get out of control.
Yeah, exactly. So we can use things like the capacity projections from vRealize operations, so you know when the environment is going to need additional capacity. So you can get this proactive warning, like, you know, within, you know, 90 days, I need to add another host to this cluster. You know, I'm going to be running out of capacity. And that's something you can use actually to do planning. You know, it's like, well, I need to start, you know, getting approval to add another host. Or you go and look at, you know, I need to go right-size my virtual machines. I need to reclaim unused resources. And, you know, and it's like, go and do that exercise to become more efficient with what we have, so we don't have to go buy another host. You can look at it from two perspectives there.
This is so backwards. If I'm in vSphere and I'm looking at my resource utilization and I see that everything is low, you know, RAM utilization is low, I got spare CPU, it's like, yes, life is good. And it's the opposite if I see that in cloud. It's like, crap, yep. I'm just spending money that I don't really shouldn't be spending because I'm not using it. It's really a backwards kind of thing.
But for so long, customers think high utilization is bad, which is, it's not. High utilization is actually good. You want to make sure performance is good. So performance is looking at things like CoStop and Ready and Swap and Balloon and things like that that tells you you're having performance problems. But you want utilization to be high, because that's where you're getting your efficiency. You're getting, you know, you're getting your money's worth. If utilization is, you know, 80, 90%, that's not a problem. It's only when your contention, you know, and is high, that's where your problem is. So that's just kind of a change in mindset that really has to come into here.
And it is tricky, because you're really relying on the dynamic and elastic nature of the cloud to be able to handle adding capacity if you do go above a certain threshold. Because I think the rule of thumb that I've always heard is, like, anything above 75% capacity gets into that dangerous territory, because now you start having race conditions, and a small increase in requests can max out a portion of the system. So you do need something that can look at that and go, oh, I need more capacity, and add it dynamically. The cloud can do that, but you have to have it configured properly. So is that something that vRealize operations can help you with, or does it tie into something else to give that elasticity?
Yeah, so it actually looks at the historical utilization of the environment, and then it projects that utilization into the future. So it actually gives you this forward-looking insight. So it knows that you normally have a peak in your workload, you know, at 8 a.m. on Monday, you know, and it knows that typically happens. Hmm. And then it can take that into account in the projections. So, you know, you don't have to say, you know, well, I'm hitting 50%. I need to start worrying about adding capacity. No, it's like, you look at how many days before the system says you're going to run out of capacity. So it gives you this warning in days, instead of looking at it in percentage of utilization.
So it gives you a warning that a human reacts to, or it gives you a warning, it also knows about the warning and can do something on its own?
So by default, it gives you the warning, and then it's up to you to react to that. You can do some automation, so you can actually tie in automation into the alert. So he says, okay, my time remaining is less than 30 days, and then go kick off this workflow that would go in and, you know, add a host, or, you know, start sending emails to people to reclaim resources or right-size their virtual machines. There's a lot of options for that, but typically the way it is now is basically alerts, and then you can add on these actions and notifications and things to automate some of this stuff.
All right. I want to understand product a little bit here. So we've mentioned VMC and AWS, and we've done some shows on that product. Now we're talking about vRealize Operations here. Is this a bolt-on, an add-on product?
It's a separate product.
Okay.
We have vRealize Operations, which is the typical on-prem deployment, and then we also have a SaaS version of it, so vRealize Operations Cloud. So it's the same product. It's just whether you want to deploy and manage it yourself, or if you want to, you know, basically leverage it as a service where you don't have to worry about managing vRealize Operations. You know, let our SREs handle that for them. Similar to like doing on-prem for your vCenter environment versus VMC, the same kind of choice. And that actually applies to all the vRealize products. So vRealize Operations, Log Insight, vRealize Operations, Network Insight, all those are available both on-prem and as SaaS services now.
I do remember when I would set up vRealize Operations or any of the vRealize suite, it was a lot of additional virtual machines and stuff running in my environment and taking up that capacity. And I also was now responsible for managing all those bits. So if I do go with the SaaS option on this, what portions do I still need to deploy in my environment to hook into that SaaS option?
So yeah, with our SaaS offerings, you know, again, really Log Insight Cloud, vRealize Operations Cloud, Automation Cloud, we've got cloud proxies, right? We still need to be able to reach inside your data center and, you know, grab all that information or deploy those virtual machines and, you know, execute those API calls. From a like VMware Cloud on AWS perspective, we can connect directly to that. So we don't necessarily have to have that cloud proxy in there, to your point, kind of eating up resources with in our fancy new hybrid cloud. So that's how we leverage cloud proxies to be able to collect that data.
All right. So I want to go back to this whole unified hybrid cloud idea. We talked about trying to figure out what I've got on premises today, how to move that up to cloud if I'm brownfield or if I'm greenfield standing up something new. What is it that is unifying all of this? Is it the fact that I've got it's all VMware, so I've got a uniform API that sits in front of it. Is that how I should be thinking about it?
All of our products basically can integrate with all of these clouds. So whether it's on-prem vSphere or it's VMware Cloud on AWS or native AWS, Azure, or GCP, we can integrate with all of those. So the user interacts with the vRealize product itself, and then it automatically handles talking to all of these clouds. So kind of all of that logistics and stuff is behind the scenes.
Okay, so it's the vRealize component that is what, whether or not my end user, my consumers know that that's what they're interacting with. That's what they're interacting with that provides the uniformity across the hybrid cloud, gives me that operational consistency. And then vRealize is dealing with, again, that abstraction layer. What happens on the back end is transparent to my consumer. They don't know or care. This could be by consumer. This could be primarily my developer community, or would there be other folks as well?
It could be developers or application owners. It could be basically anybody that is a consumer of the cloud. So it's not just developers, but developers would be one of the target audiences.
Okay, and effectively what's going to happen is I'm going to give them a form, or there's going to be an API that they're writing to, and they pull out some kind of a resource. I need some compute, I need some storage, I need some network, and then that is presented to them. They don't care much at that point where it's living or what it's doing, as long as it's meeting the SLAs that they're looking for. Exactly.
And I mean, kind of going back a little bit to our conversation about capacity, another one of the things with self-service is being able to provide that sort of governance, right? Provide you with a bucket of resources, right, that you can consume. So that way you're not going to consume our entire brand new hybrid cloud and I already need to go and purchase 16 more hosts to be able to support my own workloads, right? So we can kind of confine, our consumers within pools of resources as well. So, provide that kind of governance.
Okay, so Bob the developer can't have all the CPU and memory because it's there. We can put some bounds on what sorts of things that group is allowed to consume. And when they've hit their limit,
Exactly. Yeah. When they've hit their limit, they can ask for more, or, you know, that's when, you know, IT can go in and take a look at what is their utilization. Well, you know, Bob, the developer, you've got, again, four vCPU virtual machine for your massive batch script. go make it run more efficiently.
And that's also where cost management comes into play. So like, if you have Vireo's automation as the UI, the request portal where users come in to request things, you can actually present the estimated price of these resources that the user is requesting, and then you can track the prices of those resources over time. So the user sees that number in front of their face when they log in. They say, all of my virtual machines or my instances are costing this much per month. So it kind of gives them a bit more awareness. It's not a free resource. There is a cost to doing this stuff. So,
Brandon, you've laid out an interesting metric here, cost, because that means a lot of different things depending on where it's running. How are we getting that number that we're presenting to them? Because it could be in the hybrid cloud. It's happening in my local data center. It could be it's happening on AWS or in Azure, and all the cost metrics are different.
Yeah, so for the hybrid cloud, so the on-prem and VMware Cloud on AWS, you can actually see those costs through vRealize operations. You know, it actually does calculate the cost, and that's presented to the users through VRA or in vRealize operations. You know, they can see those costs. And then we also have Cloud Health, which helps monitor the spend on the public cloud side. And then we also have an integration between vRealize operations and Cloud Health to bring in that cost data from Cloud Health into vRealize operations. So you can see all of the costs, whether it's on-prem, hybrid cloud, or public cloud, all within vRealize operations. It's just, you know, you need to look at the data source because, you know, the Cloud Health is the go-to tool for public cloud cost management. And then vRealize operations is the go-to tool for the hybrid cloud cost management.
Right. I've used Cloud Health in the past. Actually, before it was acquired by VMware, I worked for Avar, and we used Cloud Health with a bunch of our clients to track cloud spending. It did exactly what it said on the label. I think a deeper question here is, how do you assess costs when it comes to your on-prem data center? Because I know, like, when it comes to VMware and AWS, you know how much of that is going to cost because there is a cost associated with it that's handed down to you by whatever licensing agreement you have. But when you're working with on-prem, now you have to factor in stuff like power and cooling and the licensing and the hardware. So how do you calculate that cost?
So that's actually built into vRealize operations. So you can go in and configure what we call cost drivers. So you can actually enter stuff like what you paid for that server, when you bought it, how much you paid for it. Mm-hmm. You can enter things like if you actually purchased a server versus leasing it. If you purchased it, then we can track depreciation of the servers. You can enter cost of like storage, maintenance, facilities, power, labor, all of these you can enter as cost drivers. So the system uses all of that to actually calculate the cost of the infrastructure, and then it divides that all the way down to the cost of the virtual machines themselves. There's a lot of math involved, and I mean, if you want to get into the details, I could, but it's probably pretty boring. But
spreadsheets all the way down.
Yeah, exactly.
I got to admit, that appeals to me in a really nerdy way, just to be able to fill in all that data about the thing and then see what it's actually costing you to run workloads on that. It also sounds really tedious, but I mean, just to be able to track that sounds super cool.
Actually, you don't have to actually go and configure the cost driver. So by default, the system, you just set your currency, and the system uses what we call reference costs. So it knows what the MSRP cost of your Dell, you know, servers were, or the Cisco servers, or whatever. It knows what the retail cost of that server was, and it uses that based on the date that the server was added to vCenter. And so it has these defaults, and it knows what these typically are, like industry numbers. So if you don't want to go in and customize it, you don't have to. The system will give you costs, and it'll show you. And you just realize, you know, this is based on like industry numbers and MSRP. But if you want those to get really detailed, you can go in and configure the cost drivers. So it's not mandatory, but if you configure it, it becomes more accurate.
Got it. Okay. Well, so there is an elephant in the room that we haven't talked about yet, because everything we've been talking about has been in the context of VMware, vSphere, and kind of those services. And so there's people listening to this going, yeah, but cloud native. I want to go cloud native, move to cloud native services. If I'm in this VMware world, am I confined to that world, or is there some way I can step over and start leveraging some cloud native services if I want to do that?
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple different ways to kind of look at that, right? With VMware Cloud Foundation and vSphere 7 with Tanzu, you know, we're offering easy ways to kind of step into that cloud native world and be able to run pods right on top of vSphere. There's a whole other option with, you know, with Tanzu and being able to run that directly on top of vSphere too. So if we are looking at running it inside of, say, VMware Cloud on AWS, right, we can stand up Kubernetes clusters with like TKG deploy cluster name, hit enter, boom, your cluster is stood up and built, and you can start deploying containers you know, right within you know, the Kubernetes scheduler there within Tanzu. What we can provide is insights into those types of services, right? And keep in mind, we're really talking about the operations folks, the providers, right? The IT providers, not the developers and the consumers, but, you know, from a provider standpoint, we want to be able to understand, okay, those namespaces, do we have the right limits set on those namespaces? Or am I starting to really constrict the resources that my pods are consuming? Am I starting to see contention as a result of, you know, misconfigured, you know, resource limits that I have set upstream within the Kubernetes constructs, right? So being able to get insights into, again, the application is extremely important to the organization, whether it's running as, you know, a cloud native container or whether it's running as a monolithic application, we still need to provide, you know, high performance for that application. It still needs to perform the way that the business needs it to. And so that's what we're doing, right? We're providing insights into both traditional monolithic applications and into cloud native.
Right. I believe there was something called, and I like you said, names change, but I remember it being called Mission Control. And that was intended to manage multiple Kubernetes clusters. So if you've really gone all out and started deploying Kubernetes everywhere, what sort of things does Mission Control allow the operation folks to do?
Yeah, Mission Control is it's a really cool product and helps with the lifecycle of your Kubernetes cluster. So I can, you know, even easier than typing out TKG deploy cluster, TKG create cluster, I can just, you know, click from within a UI and go ahead and spin up, you know, in this case, I can spin up a Tanzu cluster running on top of EC2, right? Just with the click of a button, it's going to go ahead and it's going to configure network, you know, everything where I just have a, you know, all of a sudden I've got a Tanzu cluster running out on top of EC2. It can handle the upgrades of that too, right? When a new version of, you know, Tanzu comes out, I can upgrade those clusters from Tanzu Mission Control. So it's really about the life cycle of that. Now, vRealize Operations can connect to Tanzu Mission Control to make things even easier. So when you deploy that cluster, vRealize Operations automatically knows about it. It's connected to that cluster. We know what resources are out there. So we can, you know, get observability, again, just from like a single click of a button to deploy that cluster. We can get all that information really, really easily.
Right. Can you also expose some level of self-service in that regard too? So if I need to add another cluster or just add a new namespace or add additional, you know, worker nodes because I've outgrown that cluster, can that all be handled through one of those two tools?
Yes, that can be handled through vRealize automation, right? We can do some of that self-service of like, okay, you want your cluster? Cool. You know, select your cluster. Hey, you could either pick a virtual machine from that catalog, or I want a Tanzu cluster, I want a Kubernetes cluster, right? It's all part of that catalog, and it can stand up whatever you want. So if you wanted to have that cluster at a click, go for it, right? We can do that through CodeStream to deploy that, but we can also deploy, you know, even the namespaces within that too. So maybe it's a big shared cluster, and for this application or maybe for this team, you just need your own namespace within that, right? You could request that from the catalog as well. So yeah, I mean, a lot of extensibility that we can do from a cloud native standpoint.
But this feels, it still feels like I've got that unified layer on top, right? In other words, again, we started this whole conversation with keeping a consistent operational context, whether my workloads are in public or private cloud. As we step over to cloud native, I'm still in the same world, still consuming kind of the same way, even though they are now cloud native services.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you're either running on top of, you're either running inside of a Kubernetes cluster, which in most cases is going to be built up of virtual machines, right? So you're still consuming those resources. You're just abstracted with yet another scheduler, kind of in between the application and the running hardware. But yeah, you're still consuming resources just like you would with a traditional application.
We've talked about what's running in all these different environments, but I think there's one thing that connects all of those environments together. And we probably need to talk about it because applications like to talk to each other. And that's the network. In some way, somehow, whether it's two applications talking to each other or just, you know, providing shared services across all these environments, you're going to need connectivity. How does the vRealize suite sort of help you out with figuring your crazy network out across all these different public and private clouds?
I got this one, Ned. I got this one. It's a cloud icon. You just drag it over and you're done. Uh-huh. That's the network. It's all good.
Oh, but never mind. We can skip to the next question.
All right, Matt or Brandon, help us out here. What's really going on with the network connectivity? Because it really is a big deal, especially when we're connecting resources that are far apart from a latency perspective.
Yeah, that's where vRealize Network Insight comes into play. So it can monitor your network traffic, your network flows, whether it's on-prem or in VMware Cloud on AWS or native clouds. You know, it can monitor the network across all those and even between them as well. So if you have a hybrid application where part of it's on-prem, part of it's in VMware Cloud on AWS, and part of it's native AWS, I don't know why somebody would do that, but if you did, you can actually monitor the network flows across all of those. So you can see the bigger picture of what's going on with your application. It understands the networks from all these different clouds. So that's the nice part.
Let's drill into that, Brandon. You said it understands network from all these different environments, as in their native network constructs, or does that mean I've got NSX layered on top of this and that's what is actually being understood, or?
Yeah, well, it understands the physical network, and if you're using NSX, it also understands your network overlays on top of that as well. So it can see both. It can see all of it. So if you have a network packet coming in, goes through NSX, hits a physical switch, and then comes back into another physical server, you can see that traffic flow.
So if I'm doing something really stupid as far as my application design, where I've separated workloads that need to talk to each other, this is where I can figure out what's going on, it sounds like to me.
Exactly. Yes. And then you can even identify, like, if that separation is creating high latency, causing performance problems because they're too far apart, you can actually identify that latency between the sessions between those two servers, like from the front end to the back end. You can see there's high latency on the network traffic, so you can see those TCP sessions being slow.
Right. There might even be something less obvious, like you have a batch process that pulls data from like three data sources and munches it into a data warehouse every night. If that data warehouse is sitting on-prem and everything else is sitting up in a cloud, you're going to see this massive amount of data egress coming from the cloud. Would vRealize Operations or Network Insight maybe flag that and say, you might want to move those two closer together so you're not paying egress charges?
Exactly. It's great at finding, actually identifying where your egress traffic is. So you can, that's also helpful for like doing migrations. You want to know what your potential egress traffic would be before you migrate to the cloud. You can do that. Or even like an existing application that's creating a lot of egress charges, you can go in and see where that's coming from. So you can see, like you said, it's just coming in this batch process, once a day or once a week, you see this huge spike in network traffic. You can look at it, maybe it makes sense to move that to, move them to the same location.
So monitoring and tracking flows like we've been describing here, that's one thing. That's kind of like higher up network analysis. Can I get down a little deeper? Like say I want to understand, presumably BGP is a routing protocol that's stitching all of these environments together and exchanging routes and destinations. Can it explain that to me, like what my BGP infrastructure looks like?
Yeah, it can do that as well. It's pretty amazing. All the different data sources that it can pull in, BGP is also part of it.
Oh, so I can get, okay. Man, we don't have enough time to dive into that. I would like to dive into that, but we should probably cover a few other things here.
Networking nerd.
I know. It's who I am. I can't help who I am. All right. So networking as a topic here, we ended up really talking about performance in a lot of ways. Give me the rest of the kind of performance things that I can track. And here's the context for this question. If I'm in my own data center, I own that metal and I can track exactly what's happening on every piece of metal that's in that data center. As soon as I'm leasing someone else's metal, I lose some of that visibility. So is there a way that I can be sure I am delivering on the SLAs that I promised the business for an application?
Yeah, you can still collect the network traffic, the data for the network traffic, even if it's not your data center. So like VMware Cloud and AWS, you can get those network flows in there. And also in like AWS, you can get those network flows as well. So you still have the data. It's just, you know, it's coming from a different source, but you know, you can get that and still get that, you know, that picture that you need to understand your network traffic.
Well, is there something like APM, like application performance monitoring, where I could, I don't know, do maybe synthetic transactions or, you know, other things that are a little higher up the stack to kind of demonstrate the app is performing as expected?
Yeah, exactly. That's another way to kind of slice it, right? Is, okay, we're talking about it from an IT standpoint, but when you start talking about APM type of tools, right, we're really looking at it from, okay, what is the user experiencing? Start looking at it from the user angle and looking at things like AppDex scores. What are the page load times for various browsers and for various users, right? So yes, we can integrate with application performance management tools like Dynatrace, New Relic, Datadog, and AppDynamics. Mm-hmm. So we can pull that data into vRealize operations. Now, for me as an IT practitioner, I don't necessarily know how to use, you know, say Dynatrace, right? It's a kind of a foreign land to me. But by being able to pull that information, by pulling those metrics into vRealize operations, into a tool that I am confident, you know, into a tool that I know how to use, right, I can now start to see things from the vSphere side. Okay, how is my virtual machine performing? Am I seeing any CPU ready? Am I seeing any contention in here? And I can draw those lines into the metrics that are coming from that APM and really kind of start to build things together to figure out, okay, my users are experiencing this. I'm seeing this on the infrastructure side. Now I can start to bring these two together and really hone in on where we need to perform troubleshooting, right, without having to go back and forth between the application teams and IT teams and, no, it's not me, it's you, it's, you know, and all that back and forth and all that time wasted. Now we can bring all this data into a single tool and, you know, try to help to troubleshoot and pinpoint those issues much faster.
Time but wasted.
I think we all know it's the network.
What? Come
it's
on.
Always the network.
It's always the network.
You asked.
It's DNS.
Oh, dear. So we talked about performance, we've talked about networking and cost, but there's one other thing that we might want to talk about a little bit, and that's security. So are there any tools that could help out with our security perspective?
Yeah, there's a couple. I mean, you know, Brandon talked about vRealize Network Insight and being able to understand the traffic flows and, you know, honestly, be able to understand what ports those traffics are flowing over. So that can help us with things like firewall configurations. But then there's also SaltStack, which is something that we recently acquired. It's now part of the VMware Cloud Management family. And what this helps us to do is there's a piece of SaltStack called SecOps. And what this helps us to do is configure drift management and configuration management. So if I, you know, basically apply a state file to a virtual machine, once I stand it up, build out that application, right, I can apply a state file to it. If anything changes within the configuration of that application, SecOps will basically send out a beacon saying like, hey, you know, somebody's gone in and modified my config files. Maybe it's malicious. Maybe, you know, maybe somebody just made a mistake, but something's changed here. So once that beacon goes out, we've got a reactor, which will then go in and say, oh, okay, well, yeah, this is what changed. Here's what's in the state file. Here's, you know, the good state that this application should be in. And it'll go in and it'll automatically change that. So within a matter of seconds, right, as opposed to finding out days, weeks, or months later that there's malicious code running within your application, right, we can go in and we can set things back to the known good state within a matter of seconds.
Gotcha. All right. And you know, I actually took a briefing from SaltStack before the acquisition, and all they were talking about was all the security features they'd added to that product. So like that really resonates. I get where you're coming from with that. All right. So we covered a lot of ground in this episode. What I think I'd like to do is if you could just give the audience, the listeners, a few key takeaways from the episode that they should bear in mind as they're wrapping up their commute or whatever they're doing today.
You know, really, the first takeaway I would say is being able to provide consistent operations. You know, again, no matter whose roof you're running under, if you're on-prem, if you're running in public cloud, right, with this hybrid cloud type of architecture, right, we want to make sure that we're very consistent. We want to make sure that we're running highly optimized. We want to be able to perform highly available type of applications, but we also don't necessarily want to confuse our end users with lots and lots of options of, well, you could run this here, you could run this there. We want to try to abstract a lot of that from the end user as well, so they have a very consistent type of experience no matter where their workloads end up running. The other one would be, you know, kind of building on that is don't overlook the importance of self-service, right? If we're look at AWS and Azure is kind of the gold standard, or even, you know, VMware Cloud on AWS, like you're saying, Ethan, with, you know, spinning up a new host. If you're waiting 90 days for Amazon to, you know, buy that server and rack and stack and so forth, you're gonna go find another provider, right? And the same goes for IT. So being able to make things, you know, available in the way that your customers want to consume them, and also making them, you know, rapidly deployable is, you know, certainly extremely important. So don't overlook self-service. And then, you know, I guess kind of the last one I would say is just because you're running in somebody else's data center, that doesn't mean that, you know, you're not responsible for those applications. It's not just, oh, yeah, it's running out there. That's fine. I don't care about it anymore. You're still responsible for the performance and the SLAs of that application, right? Your service provider, they're going to make sure that the hardware is running for you, but you still need to make sure that you're running your applications in a responsible manner, right? We're not trying to cram 3 million workloads into a 3-node cluster, right? We're still, you know, want to make sure that there's still enough resources to provide those services to our customers.
Absolutely. Well, if customers do want to try any of this stuff out, or even if you're not a customer, if you're just curious about this, if they go to cloud.vmware.com right now, they could get a 30-day trial. So you hear that, listener? If you're like, man, vRealize was really hard to set up on my internal ESXi environment, I just want to like hit the ground running and be able to take off with this thing. It looks like you can get a 30-day free trial of all these different SaaS services going to cloud.vmware.com. So that's pretty excellent. I think I'm going to have to check that out with my little home lab that I got running. Matt, if people want to know more about you and where you communicate, what are some good places to find you?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter. I am at VMSpot. I blog at VMSpot.com, although admittedly haven't been posting so much out there. But you can check out that. There's a link to YouTube channel posting various things on there. But yeah, seek me out on Twitter. That's the best way.
Awesome. And Brandon, what about you?
Yeah, I'm also on Twitter. I'm at @I'm_notoriousBDG. So you can find me there.
That's great. Awesome. Well, gentlemen, Matt, Brandon, thank you so much for being guests today on Day 2 Cloud.
Thanks so much for having us.
Thank you so much for having us.
And hey, thanks to VMware for sponsoring Day 2 Cloud, because you know what? Without our sponsors, Day 2 Cloud couldn't do what we do each week, which is bringing you technical engineering perspective and knowledge for your professional career development. So, virtual high five to you, listener, for tuning in today to the Packet Pushers Podcast Network. If you have suggestions for future shows, you know what? We'd love to hear them. Hit either of us up on Twitter at EC Banks, that's Ethan, or at Ned1313, that's me. Or you can fill out the form on my fancy website at nedinthecloud.com. Until next time, just remember, cloud is what happens while IT is making other plans.